From the Meridian Manufacturing Studios, you're listening to Inside Agriculture on this Tuesday morning. Hope your Christmas was as well as mine, and I hope you spent a lot of time with family and friends. While commercial cattlemen paid record high prices for Angus bulls in 2015, then calf values fell, and now they might be asking if they got a return on that investment. Experts say good genetics are more valuable in this new scenario. Certified Angus beef Justin Sexton shares his perspective.
As the market declines, the differentiation or the price points between good cattle and lower quality cattle gets wider, because now with an abundant supply of calves, I can now be more discerning if I'm a buyer. I no longer am purchasing high-risk calves to keep the feed yard full, and so I can be more selective, pay a higher price for the good cattle, potentially discount the cattle that don't meet my specifications from genetic potential and ultimately management as well.
Producers may document their management to get premiums, but Sexton says value is amplified when those programs are applied to top cattle.
As the number of calves that have value-added practices added to them, such as vaccination and feeding programs, increases, the need to have a solid genetic foundation under those calves only continues to grow as the number of calves that feeders have to choose from also increased.
Now, the animal scientist says even when the payout isn't direct, it's important to keep end product traits in mind.
The average pen of cattle is going to grade 70% choice and as high as 5% prime. We're seeing certified Angus beef acceptance rates and up around 30%. And so as ranchers develop breeding and feeding programs, we have to continue to keep in mind that average is a very high bar to achieve. And so investing in genetics that are focused on end product quality with acceptable marbling, ribeye area, and carcass weight is going to position them to not only achieve average, but exceed it and continue to gain market premiums.
Breeding good cattle is only part of the equation. Many genetic suppliers aid in marketing the calves, and Sexton says those are important partnerships.
The challenge with genetic value is not something that you can add overnight. And so to lay that foundation, continue to invest in quality genetics from a reputable seed stock producer that ultimately offers a program from a marketing perspective, and that may be help from marketing the calves at weaning. That may be help by purchasing those calves back at weaning, or even retaining ownership through the feed yard. But investing in genetics lays a foundation that, regardless of how the market goes up and down, gives you options to add and capture value later on down the road.
Well, no need for a Trump fix between Canada and U.S. trade. It's not broken. We'll talk about that next. From the Meridian Manufacturing Studios, you're listening to Inside Agriculture on 910 Classic Country, KCJB in Minot, Ag News 890, Lisbon and Fargo, as well as Farm News in Real Country, Thunder 1061, also Lisbon and Fargo, North Dakota. Well, Canada's trade minister says the world-leading trade relationship between Canada and the United States does not need to be on U.S. President-elect Donald Trump's list of things to fix once he takes office. Chrystia Freeland told the Canadian press last week the trade relationship between the U.S. and Canada is very balanced and mutually beneficial. Freeland visited Washington earlier this month and met with some senior Trump advisors and Republican senators, including Senate Ag Committee Chairman Pat Roberts. Her message was to remind a new Congress and administration in Washington that $2.4 billion a day that crosses the 49th parallel is good for both countries. 9 million Americans depend directly on exports to Canada, while 35 states have Canada as their top customer, according to Freeland. While the World Trade Organization ruled last week that 18 different import restrictions the Indonesian government maintains on beef, poultry, and various produce items violate global trade rules, handing an overwhelming victory to the U.S. and New Zealand. Pro Farmers' First Thing Today newsletter reports the ruling could help grow U.S. exports of a broad range of agriculture products to Indonesia that already totaled nearly $115 million in 2015. U.S. agricultural exports affected by Indonesia's restrictions include apples, grapes, oranges, potatoes, onions, flowers, juices, cattle, beef, and poultry. Indonesia can appeal the ruling to the WTO's appellate body within 60 days. If it ultimately loses, Indonesia would have to reform its rules or face the possibility of U.S. trade retaliation. While the U.S. Cattlemen's Association last week requested an update on the status of trade negotiations with China about the export of U.S. beef. In a letter sent to Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack, USCA points out that an official from China in September announced in a speech in New York that Chinese consumers should no longer be denied the choice to dine on U.S. beef. The letter requests an update on the status of those negotiations and encourages the administration to reach out to stakeholders for input and feedback. China currently consumes around 13% of the world's beef and is expected to increase their imports of red meat by nearly 24% in 2016 as compared to previous years. Well, it's the end of the line for Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack. In less than a month, Vilsack, along with the Obama administration, are going to exit Washington, D.C., as the incoming Trump administration takes over. Now, following the election in November, Vilsack reflected on his 8 years of leadership at USDA.
I think we can make the case that it's been an interesting, historic, record-breaking 8 years, and I'm in the process of finalizing a little memo that I will provide to my successor, and it starts with making sure that he or she understands what an incredible opportunity they're going to have.
Vilsack hinted last week he'd be seeking more work in agriculture policy after his time at USDA closes next month. But immediately following the election, Vilsack said whatever the next may be, it will include a commitment to family.
30 years I've been engaged in public service in one form or another, for the most part for 30 years. And when you do that, you do sacrifice a lot of time. So I think the next phase of life could include agriculture, could include advocacy, if you will, for the people I love and care about. But it will also include a commitment to family.
Vilsack is the longest-serving member of President Barack Obama's cabinet, serving in all 8 years of Obama's time in the White House. Well, we're going to take a break here. And when we come back, we're going to talk about what's going on as far as ice. Yeah, we've got a lot of it out there, and we want you to take care on the roads. And, of course, a lot of power outages and roads blocked as well. That's next. From the Meridian Manufacturing Studios, you're listening to Inside Agriculture. Well, most of North Dakota could have used Santa's sleigh Sunday and Monday and into today as well. A holiday storm that started Christmas Day shut down many roads in North Dakota, also caused power outages in many communities and rural homes across North Dakota. Now, snow ranged from less than a half inch at Fargo to 16 and a half inches in Dickinson in far western North Dakota, 16 inches in Starkweather, and the far northern part of North Dakota, just north of Devil's Lake. Snow was so heavy in the central part of the state as well. Bismarck reported another 12 and a half inches of snow over the weekend. Also, Monday morning, or yesterday morning, the North Dakota Department of Transportation closed I-94 through North Dakota. And then late yesterday, I-94 remained closed between Jamestown and Dickinson. The North Dakota Department of Transportation also closed I-29 from Grand Forks to the Canadian border for much of the day yesterday before reopening that portion. Now, Otter Tail Power Company issued a statement alerting customers in its service area that freezing rain and ice were taking a toll on power lines and causing numerous outages. Monday, Otter Tail said 13 communities it serves were having power problems. Jamestown and Milbank, South Dakota were especially hard hit. Cass County Electric reported late yesterday that 1,300 of its customers were without power, and crews that began working on the issues Sunday continued to work on them. Rain that turned into ice followed by strong winds were causing problems for power lines and those that work on them. The primary area problems extended from north of Valley City to south of Lisbon. Well, when it comes to ice, isn't it amazing that Jody Heemstra has a report on ice melt products to make it easier to clear off sidewalks and driveways during the winter? South Dakota Department of Agriculture Forest Health Specialist Dr. John Ball encourages people to use them correctly. Well, Jody Heemstra has more in this report.
Snow and ice are a normal part of winter in South Dakota, and people can be creative about how they get them off sidewalks or driveways. South Dakota Department of Agriculture Forest Health Specialist Dr. John Ball says if you use ice melt products, be careful around your trees, shrubs, lawn, and plants.
The ice melt products that are available all contain chloride, and chloride is the anion that causes damage to plants. So any of the ice melt products, whether magnesium chloride or potassium chloride or sodium chloride, all contain the chloride ion. And that is the one that causes damage to plants. Now, of course, you're not going to see that damage until the spring, but plants that are next to your sidewalks and driveways where you're going to get some runoff, you're going to find that you're going to get some dieback to the grass perhaps. You're also going to get some dieback to your trees and small shrubs that are lining it too. So a couple of things. First of all, use the minimum amount of ice melt products that you have to. Again, they're not designed to pour them on so that they melt all the ice. They're designed that you should salt them just lightly so that it breaks the bond between the ice and the sidewalk or driveway, and then you can shovel it off. I see people put it on so much the ground crunches. That's using far too much product. The other thing is you might want to consider adding a little sand to this as well to provide the traction. So to cut back on your salt, which is good for people as well as your landscape, use just the minimum amount necessary to break the bond. Consider adding a little bit of sand to this as well to improve traction as you're coming up to the porch and such. And then also, come spring, make sure that you water thoroughly the area surrounding your sidewalk and driveway so that you're going to dilute any salts that are in there. The good thing with chloride is it leaches through the soil very quickly. So as long as you can get it off very early in the spring so it doesn't turn to a dust and dry on your sidewalk, so wash down your sidewalk, your driveway, the area around it in the spring, that should minimize any of the damage.
Dr. Ball says repeated exposure to excessive chloride over several winters can kill sensitive plants. Tree care information can be found on the South Dakota Department of Agriculture website, sdda.sd.gov. Then search for tree pest alerts. Reporting in South Dakota, I'm Jody Heemstra.
Well, make sure that you use the right amount of salt or de-icer on your driveways or wherever you're traveling, because it definitely, you overdo it, you could cause some issues. We're going to be back with more of what's going on inside agriculture. We're going to talk hogs right after this. From the Meridian Manufacturing Studios, you're listening to Inside Agriculture. While the number of confirmed Seneca Valley virus cases remains low in the U.S., but incidence levels are up in the past 2 years. Swine Health Information Center Executive Director Dr. Paul Sundberg says Seneca virus may not be at the peak levels seen early in the fall, but it does remain an issue.
Seneca Valley virus, or Seneca virus A, is the technical name for it. It causes blisters on the nose and lips of pigs, and it causes blisters and erosions in between the toes, above the coronary band, right above the hoof, and it looks exactly like foot and mouth disease. That's the real problem.
With Seneca Valley virus, pigs can have a fever and go off feed. They can also become lame.
But the big issue is that this looks exactly like foot and mouth disease. We haven't had FMD since 1929, and what we don't, there's two things that can happen. One is people can look at this and assume it's Seneca Valley and miss FMD. The other thing is that if these pigs go into packing plants, the FSIS and USDA has to stop things because they have to assume that it's FMD until it's proven differently. And so that can stop things up, and we have the possibility, the potential for shutting a packing plant down. We just can't have that.
I'm Farm Director Terry Loomis.